If your team has something called the Purge in the offseason, it probably was not a championship season. I'm just saying. That's...
But, Greg, won't you please think of the poor networks?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Fox Sports. I'm really worried about them. But we tried to record this on Thursday, and the Skype gods decided not to let us. Letemus Diaz might have been on our roster.
And welcome to episode number 123 of Artificial Turf Wars, where we'd like to make a trade, but nobody's interested in these magic beans. I'm your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined by Joshua Housam. Josh, how you doing?
Not too bad, and you?
I'm excellent, because we got stuff to talk about. Almost didn't, then we did, because the Blue Jays have made a trade. Goodbye, Edledis Diaz, and we'll talk about the implications of that. We will talk about Justin Smoak, who has not inherited a gold glove, but is re-upped, whether he wanted to or not. Yainer Solarte has not. And all of the implications for other people who have left the 40-man roster and what that's going to look like. There was J.A. Happ buzz. I don't know what that means exactly. Then we have some coaching changes. Again, brand new hitting coach, brand new bench coach. We'll talk about what that means. In the context of next year, there's a bunch more money coming from Fox. We have your questions, and then we have a gold star to one of our favorite players on Twitter, and a do-over from a repeat offender, because we love our repeat offenders around here. Wow. It doesn't seem like a lot's happened, but that seems like, now I'm looking, it's like a long list. So let's start with the most recent news. Aledmys Diaz is no longer a Toronto Blue Jay.
He's an Astro.
All right. I feel like he's going back to not very far away. He came from the Cardinals, right?
Yep.
It's not super far from where he came from. Wrong league.
It's not that close either.
And then we got a guy named Trent Thornton, who I have just discovered one fact about, and you seem to like it. It's that his leg kick when pitching from the windup, his toe comes up to about eye level every single time.
Yeah, I love funky deliveries. I always have. And his is funky.
He doesn't look happy unless he's basically doing the splits on the mound there.
Yeah. It's funny. When he pitched from the stretch, his delivery is much cleaner. I mean, it has to be, but it's totally different.
Yeah. Well, you can't give a guy that long to scout you out on the delivery when he's on first base, because he's not a lefty, right?
Right.
You can't be right-handed and have spend an extra, you know, 3/4 of a second with your foot in the air.
No, it doesn't really work. Although it's still kind of slow to the plate, so that could be an issue. I'd never heard of Tyler Thornton before today. So, take this with some grain of salt. I'm just reading other people's scouting reports, but it seems like he's a guy who impressed quite a bit.
Apparently, I called him Trent because that's what someone typed down. But his name's Tyler. So apologies.
Did I just say Trent as well?
No, you said Tyler, and then I looked at the list. Gonna catch my own mistake for once.
No, it is Trent.
Well, so, then the Blue Jay Hunter's wrong.
Yeah, no, it's Trent. I was reading the video that you were talking about. His name is Trent Thornton. Let's get that out of the way. Right. Really important.
Done.
Trent Thornton. And so he's a guy that if you look at his numbers, he's not gonna be very impressive. His ERA is over 4 in AAA, 5 the year before that. But he throws reasonably hard. Apparently, he has really good spin on his pitches. His fastball is curveball, slider, and Keith Law seemed to like him. Apparently, there's a lot of interest in him. When Keith Law likes a move with the Jays, it's not that common. I'm just kidding. I don't actually think there's a bias there, but
I don't think Keith Law likes like 3/4 of what anybody does, which just shocks me.
Well, I just think that he has his own evaluations and doesn't care what other people's are, which is it's fine, but. One thing that's interesting about this guy, but not Tyler,
Trent.
Yes, Trent. That's why I said not Tyler. But he's got that funky delivery, and he throws reasonably hard and throws some strikes. So that sounds like it could be something good. But he tends to get hit harder than he should, apparently. So it seems like at minimum, this is a guy that could be a multi-inning relief pitcher who provides some value out of the bullpen, if not potentially a back of the rotation starter, which, you know, on the surf, it's something they needed, right? I mean, they traded an infielder for something they needed. I don't know on value if it's necessarily a fantastic trade, but it worked out filling a hole.
Yeah, I mean, it's the what we've said the last couple times we've been around is the Blue Jays need pitching. There's no way around it. There's no secret to it that if you throw them anything moderately valuable, that's major league ready, not necessarily dominant, but just major league ready, I think they're going to at least take a serious look at that, those assets, because they're that far behind the hole with starting pitching.
Exactly. And, you know, especially when they're trading from their infield depth, which is, as we've made jokes about before, they have about 4,000 infielders right now. Well, now they have, you know, 3,999 infielders.
Chip away.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they traded JB Woodman for Diaz last year, and but Woodman has been released and is not playing affiliated baseball right now. And then, so on an asset management level, it actually seems like it's quite good. And I've seen people mentioning that on Twitter after this trade. It doesn't really matter because Aledmys Diaz was worth less a year ago than he is now. So you can't say, oh, they got, you know, traded Woodman for, you know, for this, right? Like, it doesn't really work that way. That said, Thornton seems like he could be useful, and that's really all that should matter.
All right. I think that about puts the lid on the first offseason trade for the Blue Jays. So kind of what we were expecting. We'll see if they continue to make these, you know, little incremental moves to try and get them into spring training, or if there's a bigger splash coming.
Okay.
That said, we have Justin Smoke, who they did make a decision about, which they decided to pick up his option, possibly the biggest no-brainer in the roster. Not that the media would have had you believe that.
Yeah, I don't know. Was John Heyman just bored? Put out this report that the Jays, you know, hadn't decided on picking up Smoke's option. Of course they had.
I mean, I haven't decided whether I'm going to have breakfast tomorrow morning or not, but the odds are that I'm going to need to have something for breakfast, right?
Now Greg's going to get like really drunk for some reason tonight and just sleep through breakfast and just eat lunch just to spite himself.
Exactly. So, for a quality player who has been, you know, dependable the last 2 years, plays good first base, is an offensively, he's above average production. Now, he didn't win a gold glove. I think we noted that he was nominated last time we had the podcast. He did not win, which, that means no Blue Jay has won anything in this offseason.
Nope. No, I mean, a lot of people thought Matt Olson was going to win, and because he won the Fielding Bible Award, and some of those same people vote on this. Yeah, like, it would have been nice, but
just going to have to go with the leather glove all next season.
Well, I mean, it'll probably be a lot easier to pick balls with a glove made of leather than one made of gold.
Exactly. That's, I think, what people forget about the gold glove. He has to play with an actual metal glove the following year, and that's why it's so hard to repeat as a gold glove winner.
There you go.
Yeah. Fun fact that you probably won't want to bring out at parties. So the other option that was on the table was Yenhervis Solarte. And in not a shocker, the Blue Jays decided not to pick that up, which means he's still kind of hanging around the roster, but he's not going to be a Blue Jay next year for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he's a Blue Jay by Tuesday, because that's the date when they have to set the 40-man rosters. We're recording this on Saturday, so the 20th. And they have a crunch, which we've talked about in the past. They have a few guys that need to add. And in fact, the player they just traded for, Trent Thornton, needs to be added to the 40-man.
Was Aledmys Diaz not on the 40-man?
He was, but okay. Thornton was not. Thornton technically is not on it yet.
Mm.
Right? He was potentially exposed to the Rule 5 if not added by Houston, and now the same applies to the Blue Jays. So they have this crunch, and right now Solarte has taken up a spot, and the non-tender deadline is 10 days later. So I can't see any way he isn't DFA'd on Tuesday.
Right. And for the, I don't know, how long was he entertaining for, really, or useful for?
6 weeks?
Yeah, okay, fair. Maybe 5.5. I don't know. Yeah, it was not a last three quarters of the season we want to talk about for him. It's a shame that he got exposed, because he does seem to be a, you know, fun player, fun guy to have in the clubhouse, but just not someone you can play every day. So with a couple people banging on the door in the infield, I think it was pretty obvious and has been for a while. So goodbye, Yenhervis. We hardly knew ye.
Yeah, and it's too bad too, because he was actually a decent player before that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 2015 and 2016, he was a legitimate starting player, and he's just, you know, he's declined.
Happens a lot. So you alluded to this, that they need to add players. They did DFA several guys. Do you have some of those names? I know you mentioned, let's see, Jake Patrychka, Ramirez. I can't remember now all of them. There were six
Jamin
guys.
Harold, he was just not added. But
okay.
Yeah, I mean, so the names that they dropped were Jose Fernandez, Jake Patrychka, Reiner Cruz, Taylor Guerrero, and Jason Schaefer. Now, some of those things, like Reiner Cruz, he was never going to be anything. He just was on the 60-day DL, and they had to get rid of him. Fernandez was the one that was interesting to people, and I think you noted this previously when we were talking about this. He's a hard-throwing lefty who did really well in AAA last year, and he's only 25. So what that says to me is that they either don't think he has the potential to be a lefty reliever, which, considering they have no lefty relievers, seems unlikely. It's more so that I think they're going to add Travis Bergen, who dominated AA as a lefty last year after finally staying healthy, and, you know, put him on the 40-man roster because they think he has more potential to help.
And that's not a big leap up from AA to the majors for, you know, for a relief prospect, right?
No, it's nothing.
So, well, we'll see if they prove you right in about, well, how many days did you say?
5 days? 3 days.
3 days. We'll let you know on Tuesday. No, we won't. We'll let you know the Tuesday after that. So they still have a bit of a crunch. They have like four or five slots now on the 40-man that they can move people into. But
they have four slots right now, but they have some guys they can drop, like Mark Leiter, who I don't know why he even survived the purge, but, and then poor Dalton Pompey and Hervis Solarte, all of them could be off, which could create some nice room.
If your team has something called the purge in the offseason, it probably was not a championship season. I'm just saying. That's okay, so that's the 40-man. There was some conversation from Ross Atkins that they had met with Jay Happ's agent. You asked me to bring that up specifically because you weren't sure what that would entail.
Yeah, when I've been talking about Jay Happ, I've just been saying all offseason doesn't make any sense. Because, look, Jay Happ's great, and I love Jay Happ, and I've written about him 400 times. He's right as much as I write about Marco Estrada. But he's 36, and with the way he's been pitching, he has to try to be getting a three-year deal, right?
Anybody who's 36 is trying to get as many years as they possibly can, because next year, there's no three-year deal for a 37-year-old.
Right, and especially considering he's still coming off a very good season, and next year might not be. But if you're the Blue Jays and you're a building team who's not planning to win next year and maybe in 2020, do you really want to be tying in a roster spot to a pitcher who might be in his late 30s and declining?
Yeah. Yeah, this is not a CC Sabathia situation where, you know, the Yankees have the luxury of signing him to one-year deals every, like, the interests just don't line up the same way.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Jay Happ says, hey, I love Toronto so much, I'll sign for 1 or 2 years, fine. But I don't see that being a situation that would be something that his agents would be okay with.
Yeah, I mean, this year was the gamble year to prove his value. So now you got to go get the value. Totally agree with you. So I'm glad that they just felt bad that people would think that they never talked to Jay Happ. So they said, hey, Jay, you want to come here for a year? And he said, no. Now they've had a chat. Yeah. All right. So the things that have also changed, we'll start with the nerdy one is the front office change. We found out that Carson Cistulli, who has been at FanGraphs for literally forever, as far as I know, I read his farewell post at FanGraphs. He's been there for 9 years, which is just, my mind is blown that one guy at a website for 9 years. All kinds of articles at FanGraphs and different ideas he's put out there and everything else. He's not at FanGraphs anymore because he was hired by the Toronto Blue Jays, which I totally did not expect that. Would you have guessed in a million years that Carson Cistulli would be working for the Blue Jays?
Nope. That's a pretty easy one to answer.
Yeah, a lot of authors go on to teams, but he just seems so entrenched. And he has, I don't know how to put it, Carson has a slightly absurd personality, like quirky. So the idea of him in a, you know, I can't imagine they're going to ask him to come into the office, put on a suit and sit down and work at spreadsheets all day on their dime. Like, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so they hired him as a pro scout. And it's very funny because Carson Cistulli's whole thing is looking for these fringe prospects and trying to pump them up.
Yeah.
So I
don't know.
Maybe they think he's really good at identifying the guys on the fringe. And it's like, all right, you are the one who's going to go out there and get us the next insert random prospect who balloons here.
He also has he was responsible for the nerd score, which was, I forget what the acronym stood for, but essentially he would rank each starting pitcher in terms of his interestingness to watch, as opposed to the how should I put it, how good he was. So R.A. Dickey had a high nerd score, right? Because he threw a knuckleball, even though he didn't throw hard. And then he put the two starting pitcher nerd scores up against one another and develop a game nerd score. So if you wanted to watch the most interesting games of the week, you could go down his scoreboard and you know, not be caught watching, shall I say, Jay Happ versus, you know, some other garden variety starter and wondering why you tuned in. I'm like, just that sort of whole different way of kind of approaching the game. It's cool, but again, I still don't see how an MLB team is like, yeah, among the many things you do, I think there's a thing we really need here.
Yeah, I mean, definitely there's a lot of goofy things. Like on his podcast, it's all jokes and things like that. So I think it's got to be about the prospect stuff. Although, you know, they did just trade for Trent, not Tyler Thornton. And he's got that big, funky delivery. I think he'd have a high nerd score.
Indeed, that's exactly the kind of thing that would bump up the nerd score. Or maybe the Blue Jays just like someone who likes Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, which, as I recall, is the theme for Fangraphs Audio and has been forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that. There's also the coaching changes. So we know Tim Leeper and Brooke Jacoby are gone. A lot of people a little bit upset about Tim Leeper on Twitter. I kind of understand that. I remember when people were upset about Brian Butterfield leaving when in that era where... because the coaches are on the field, you know, as opposed to maybe like the bullpen coach, it's someone I think the people get familiar with seeing or them talking to players and that kind of thing. So they sort of identify with them.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think that's certainly true. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. But ultimately, is it going to be, the difference between winning and losing or were these guys doing a great job? I don't know. Like, how do you tell whether Tim Leeper's doing a good, mediocre, or fantastic job as a first base coach? You had some thoughts on that, I think.
I do. And I just, but before I get into them, I think also with Leeper, you know, he was always, you know, he was socially conscious and he was, you know, he not only just on the field, but he was vocal.
Yes.
So people, you know, they identify with him and they actually recognize him as opposed to just like, you know, thinking about certain other coaches who always send people in from third base when they shouldn't. But when it comes to Tim Leeper, one of the things that I think may have cost him his job is how bad the outfielders were. So Tim Leeper is the outfielding coach, and Pillar and Grichuk both took steps backwards this year from their career norms. And then, you know, Teoscar Hernandez was unplayable despite all reports that he could handle all three outfield spots coming up. So I wonder if that hurt him, this idea that the outfielders should be better than they are and the coaching should be part of that. I don't know if it's positioning or what, but I think that cost him his job. And then Brooke Jacoby, well, you know, team can't hit.
Yeah, team under him was both one of the most fantastic offensive powerhouses of all time and mm-hmm. also a complete mystery as to why they couldn't avoid some of the very common pitfalls in the modern game and actually score runs. Both Brooke Jacoby teams. So, yeah, to me, the hitting coach is like just smoke and mirrors most of the time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, major league hitters tend to know what they're doing and what they want to do. I think there's only so much they can do just in terms of making sure their mechanics are consistent.
Indeed. Okay, so they were replaced. Leeper has not been replaced. Jacoby has been replaced by Guillermo Martinez, who has been a hitting coach in the minor leagues, and I cannot remember what he spent his last year doing.
He was a roving hitting instructor for the minors as well. So, you know, he was promoted from within. He was in the Blue Jays minor league organization. So, I mean, that could be interesting. Obviously, some of the Jays minor league hitters are pretty good. So,
can they go one or two? I wonder how many of these moves actually have to do with, you know, Vlad Jr. more than anything else. As silly as it sounds, I wonder if in a lot of cases, you know, making sure that there's people who can communicate with him and people who know him and people who he's comfortable with to try and make it as easy as possible to make that transition to the major leagues. As silly as it sounds, if he really is going to be the franchise player, what does it hurt to spend, you know, to spend $1 million on a coach who he really, really enjoys working with?
I hope that's not what they're doing, because he's the one guy who probably doesn't need it. He grew up around baseball fields. You know, his dad was a Hall of Famer and he was at the field all the time. And he's so good that I would hope that if they're picking coaches, it's not with him in mind, but with everybody else.
Fair enough. Which leads us to Dave Hudgens, who has displaced DeMarlo Hale as the bench coach. I understand that DeMarlo Hale has not been completely displaced. He's just not the bench coach anymore. Hudgens' background?
Well, he was the hitting coach for the Astros up until very recently. So, you know, I don't know exactly what his role on the hitting side will be, but that's fine. It doesn't really matter. He's a bench coach. But the interesting thing with Hale is that, as you mentioned, he has not been let go yet, unlike Leaper and Jacoby. They're trying to find him another spot within the organization. So I was really hoping that he would go coach third and Rivera can move over to first.
Just so we don't have another year of hearing about Luis Rivera's sends or lack thereof.
Yeah. Although we're going to, if that happens, we're going to get all these guys thrown out trying to stretch singles into doubles. So I don't know.
Go, you can make it. You can make it. I still think that there should be, you know, that Blue Jays art fellow on Twitter. He does some really nice stuff. I want him to do one of those where someone is running Rivera's stop sign. Very calmly, just an action shot of him with his arms up and that unimpressed expression on his face as somebody blows the doors off of him at like 25 miles an hour.
I love that idea. And his name is Chris Ripley, by the way, for everyone who's interested. His stuff is at Blue Jays Art. He's really good, but we need to commission this.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe the Patreon, we can work something out. Commission it and then give it away. Oh man. All right. So going forward, of course, we are talking about a team that wants to contend. All these changes are getting made, players getting called up, trades, etc., etc. This is in light of the recent development. Fox has signed on for 2021 to 2028 now with Blue Jays baseball, with Major League Baseball, for $5.1 billion over that period, simply extending the existing contract up to 2028. So for all of you who think baseball's dead, well, baseball is now paid for until 10 years from now. How can you say the teams are just, oh gosh, I don't know how they're going to figure out how to pay people? Like, I mean, Steve Pierce just got $6.25 million after winning World Series MVP and being far more than a serviceable first baseman. Like, what is going on here other than a huge labor dispute coming in the next year or two?
The huge labor dispute. I mean, this is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. I mean, and the players will try to use this deal as leverage for something, whether it's a massive increase in the luxury tax, some kind of difference in the way the money is distributed and how players become free agents and everything, because this is an extra $24 million per team per year.
Like, $24 million is a star player, right?
Right.
Like a superstar player.
Yes. Like, yeah, if you want to say, you know what, we'd like to go sign Patrick Corbin. Well, this deal will pay for Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, it's insane. It's like it pays for... If you wanted to extend Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you could sign him to a fair value 8-year contract right now and effectively have exactly the same amount of money you did before they signed the Fox deal.
Yep.
36% increase, by the way, over the previous yearly amount that Fox was giving him, lest you think that this is just the extension of the same deal. No, it's a big jump up.
Yeah. And it was funny. I was seeing people compare this to, I think you saw this too, to Ryan Howard's contract or Miguel Cabrera's. It's like, well, this is enough for two more years. We're going to do a big, huge money extension, even though we don't know what the landscape's going to be at that point.
But yeah, it's absolutely possible. But I don't care.
Nope. Don't
money
care.
Is money. And I want to see the product on the field. And I don't care how much it costs, because clearly the money is not coming from the $60 I'm going to spend on nice seats or whatever, $80 or whatever it works out to, per seat, by the way, for all of you who haven't been to a game lately, it is getting that ridiculous. No, the money is coming from TV deals, from, radio rights, from, online, views, from merchandise. There's so many different revenue streams that the idea that somehow the player salaries are what's driving up the prices in some kind of direct relationship is ridiculous.
Oh yeah, it's nuts. Greg, won't you please think of the poor networks?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Fox Sports. I'm really worried about them. But anyway, so this will be scary. I mean, I really hope that they can somehow find a way to, actually get a deal that doesn't involve us missing an entire season of baseball and killing it in Toronto again, because I like baseball.
Yeah. Well, Rob Manfred doesn't, so...
Good point.
Anything's possible. All right, what is possible for us is that we're going to come back with your questions, and then we have, of course, gold stars and such to hand out. We'll be right back. And we have returned, and of course, with our return, we've scanned over your questions, we've looked at them, we've decided that none of them are worth answering. No, that's not true. We're just going to go to them right now.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
First question from November 11th is difficult, requires research, which is why I'm going to ask you, from Matt Sweeby at Blue Jay Matt. For the next pod, any news on Julian Merriweather's recovery? He had Tommy John surgery on 9th March. He should be well into a throwing program and maybe starting to think about throwing from a mound, but I haven't heard any updates. Also, where does he land on the Jays prospect list?
So for the first part of that question, like you said, he had the surgery on the 9th of March, and that's 9 months ago. So he's probably into his throwing program, but we're not going to hear about anything until we get closer to spring training, because it doesn't matter so much. He's not going to be in the opening day roster, and they're going to give him that whatever time he needs to get all the way back. As for where he stands on the prospect list, I don't think he's really on it. I mean, he might be in the back half of their top 30 or something like that. He seems like a guy who, if he's all the way back, could be a useful reliever or a depth starting pitcher. And then, if that sounds like someone the Blue Jays is just trading for, that's not a secret. But that's not a guy that is exactly an exciting prospect.
Indeed. Next.
From Colleen Evans at Colleen Evans 6. If you could design the Blue Jays spring training ball cap, what would it look like?
I would have to say it would need to have a Blue Jay on it. I mean, if you would just want to do like part of that Blue Jay logo, maybe like the sort of the top half of the Jays feather and eye, or, kind of like that, that'd be interesting. I really don't like things with the letter T or the maple leaf. It's the Blue Jays. You shouldn't abandon that just because it's spring training. Also, definitely blue cap. 100%. I'm not.
Blue Jays blue, not navy.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. True Blue Jays blue in the cap. Yeah, those two things would be the part of a portion of the Blue Jay logo. I understand you don't want the whole thing, but some stylized portion and the true blue of the jersey. That's what would get me started.
I say bring back the tee with the flexing bird around it.
The steroid bird.
Yes,
everybody loves a good steroid bird. Kate Stanwyck at OK Stan says, what changes would you like to see made to the Blue Jays spring training facility in Dunedin during the renovation? And then related to that, I guess, would be minor leaguers follow-up. Would you like the new Dunedin Stadium to mirror the Roger Ascension's dimensions and wall height?
So the second question first, I think that there's value to that, that, you know, like playing in the, let the outfielders get used to the angles that they're going to be playing in the major league stadium. I don't want it. I think it's more fun seeing the gigantic walls in center. And it's just, it feels more like a minor league park. You know, it's not supposed to look like the major leagues, and they're not going to be playing every game in the dome anyway. And you know, it's not going to make turf field. So nothing would be the same anyway. As for what I would like to see, maybe just a little more seating in the outfield, because right now there's nothing there. It's a school behind it. You know, so they can't get as many fans in there. And it's actually a lot of fun when there's a lot of fans at spring training games.
I would like a little shade.
Oh, yeah. Good one. I forgot about that.
I mean, everybody loves Florida and the sunshine and everything else, but that facility is not set up to do anything but melt people, especially. I think I had seats down the third baseline. I was like, holy moly. It's just like being in the dome, except there's no concourse really that's big enough to hide on.
And you're in Florida.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The humidity is just as high, and the sun is just that, what, 10% more intense all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, brutal. So those two things would be nice. I'm not fussed on the dimensions of that. I actually kind of like a wall that you can do. You don't have to be Rajay Davis or Kevin Pillar and at some magical moment in order to get up and look like you're going to steal something. I think most outfielders should at least be able to make that effort. And if you can do that in spring training, well, then it's fun to show off.
Yeah.
Next.
All right. From Noel Moxon at Circus Freak. Oh, he's not the box ball anymore. What is your projected starting lineup and bench?
Are you kidding? it is, what is the date today? November 17th. I'll be honest. I always find, even when someone makes a trade in like middle of January and people try and figure out how that guy is going to slot into the lineup or the bullpen, I laugh ever since, I think, the Mike Napoli trade. that taught me, do not project anything or spend any digital ink discussing where a guy fits in, because 72 hours later it's all out the window.
I mean, that's very true. I mean, well, and it's very funny, because when we started recording this, our first attempt, we tried to record this on Thursday and the Skype gods decided not to let us. Ledmus Diaz might have been on our roster.
He might have. Yep. Okay, here's my one person not in the starting lineup on opening day, Vlad Guerrero Jr. That's all you get.
And I'll give you one that is Troy Tulowitzki. Yeah, I'm doubling down.
No comment. No comment.
Doubling down, damn it.
Luke at Split Letters asks, if you were in charge of renovations at the Dome, say Rogers greenlit it, money ready to flow, and you were told that you must include a unique quirk, a la the Green Monster or Wrigley's Ivy, notably he did not say the home run sculpture like Marlins Park, what would you add?
It's not really a quirk, because that wasn't on the field, right? Ooh, that's a good one. I think I might have to go with the, like, pull something from what Houston had with the hill in center field. Because it would be the worst. What I would actually do probably is like just one random section where the foul territory is enormous, but just one little section.
I think I would put a little bit of a zigzag in that outfield wall somewhere where it came in unexpectedly by about 10 feet and then back out. But make it symmetrical, just to keep on both sides. Like, your power alleys have this magic spot where you really only have to hit a ball about 365 to get them over.
It's like every hitter immediately wants to come to Toronto on one-year contracts.
If I could just figure out how to hit it at that one precise angle. Oh, man. Yeah, so that would be my quirk. Hills, you don't see the flagpoles out in the outfield anymore. That was a thing for a while.
Yeah, that was bizarre. I mean, we're not talking about the dome anymore, but there was a hill with a flagpole on it in play. The park I play at has that because it's a city park and there's no control over that.
Maybe we could put some sort of Toronto traffic running right through the stadium. Just detour people so you could try and hit the cars with the home run balls, like the train in Seattle. It's like, because everybody knows that nobody can get on the train in any reasonable amount of time in Toronto. So you just do.
You're just trying to make this even more like Talbot Park, where I play, where people try to hit the balls onto Eglinton to hit the cars.
There you go. Maybe we should just move the Blue Jays to Talbot Park on Eglinton and see how it goes for a couple.
I am so for this idea. I'd love to see Major Leaguers show up. Where's the right field fence?
you hit it that way, you just keep running. There you go. Oh man. I guess that is all of our questions. I didn't miss a refresh there, did I?
Nope.
All right. Thank you once again for all of your questions. It is good fun speculating on all of the futures you people are imagining. We are going to go to the Gold Star, which is coming.
I think
from
that's
Twitter.
Rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a Gold Star.
You enjoy that. You've earned it.
We are going to put someone in the Gold Star Hall of Fame, which we've never done before, I don't think. And that would be the Twitter handle at iThrow88, Dan Heron, former Major League Baseball pitcher, who is probably one of the funniest and most self-deprecating people on Twitter, and also an incredibly infrequent tweeter. So if you were to follow him, it really wouldn't clog up your timeline.
No, he doesn't waste time.
No. So this week, Mark Mulder tweeted, guy on a street corner with a sign saying he lost his job and needs money. Directly across the street from him, two fast food places have big signs, quote, now hiring all positions, shrug emoji. I can only wonder if he's walked over there. Dan Heron chimes in. We made millions playing a kid's game. Shrug emoji. Like, dude, let's not be all judgy. The only reason you're a millionaire is just the total fluke of fate.
Yeah, you just happen to be able to throw a baseball fast.
Which in any other period of history would have been a completely meaningless skill.
Yeah.
So, yeah, one of them understands that there might be some subtlety as to why that guy's standing there with a sign, and that he could have just as easily been a guy standing somewhere with a sign. Yeah, there clearly does not.
If you wrote through Mark Mulder's Twitter timeline, it's a lot of that kind of stuff.
There's someone called at Oswego CSN23 responded, one of these former players is really funny, many times in a funny, self-deprecating way. The other is apparently just Mark Mulder.
I like that.
Dan Heron's pinned tweet, which is why he gets to go into the Hall of Fame. I had it back here.
Where he will donate his UCL to science.
Yep. And then the other one, Pedro Moura tweeted, Alex Wood intends to pitch out of the stretch through 2018. He goes on a bit about why. And Dan Heron quote tweets, I pitched a few seasons completely out of the stretch, actually. Just not by choice.
Which is funny because he was actually really good.
Oh, yeah. But he's one of those players who was acutely aware of that Father Time came for him and there was no looking back. There was no getting those back. So he was never one, I don't think, to overplay how good he was at any given moment. When he was good, that was fine. But when he wasn't good, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to come back next year and be better. It was like, no, I'm old. I'm slow. I can't do the things I used to do.
Yep. And so Dan will never get into the real Hall of Fame, but he gets to come into ours.
One Gold Star Hall of Famer. Initial induction, Dan Heron. iThrow88 on the Twitter. Which brings us to the thing that you don't want to get from us. How many times before you enter the do-over Hall of Fame? Let's think about that.
Man, what a cliche.
I thought writers hated cliches.
No. That's not how about I press the right button?
Oh my god, did he really just say that?
Well, we can try again, right?
You talking about a do-over, baby? Are you talking about a f***ing door?
We believe in second chances.
And we have, for the repeat do-over offender, Michael Wilbon. We had him on because he was not happy with some of the statistics being used in this modern game.
Yeah, you know, if you notice that the little drop to played, we believe in second chances. We do not believe in third chances, Michael, because you've just blown your second chance. This so back the first do-over we gave to him was back in September probably, or late August, and they were talking about the Cy Young voting and Jacob deGrom being in the mix, and he was against it. Well, he doubled down. Here was his response after deGrom won the Cy Young almost unanimously, 29 out of 30 votes. Quote, "I'm not with these people. I don't respect their judgment, actually, because I don't value what they value. I value winning the damn game more than the ERA, and therefore it is analytical hijacking. These people have hijacked baseball. They want to impose their will and tell you what's important. I don't share most of, maybe none of, their values, and it's absurd." End quote.
Jacob deGrom had more starts with less than one run allowed going into the eighth inning than, like, I can't remember what the percentage was, like 75% of pitchers in baseball. He had more times getting into the seventh inning than like 22 different staffs in baseball. But he clearly was, no good.
I mean, good on Michael Wilbon for fighting a battle that ended 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, like, nobody believes this anymore except Michael Wilbon. I mean, yes. Winning games matters for a team. That's the end.
Yeah, we're not disputing that the wins are important. But that little W beside the pitcher's name, we've all decided it's just a W. It doesn't represent anything that happened on the field.
Yeah, it's insane that we're even talking about this.
Also, you drop the first three words of the quote, which I think sets it, because you can hear the New York accent. You know, Tony.
Wilbon's not a New Yorker. He's from Chicago.
You might as well be. There has to be a guy in Tony with you in the booth when you're being like that, though, right? Like, it's gotta be.
I do agree with that.
Yeah. Poor Tony. I don't even know what Tony does for a living. It's just like, you got to sit there and listen to him all day. Somehow the idea that a guy who doesn't allow any runs ever is not the best pitcher in baseball, because some guy who allows more runs is better because his team scored more for him, just is mind bending. So you don't get a do-over, Michael. You get to go into the Hall of Shame.
Get shunned.
Oh, my question is, if you hate that much about the way the game is, there must be a bunch of other things you don't like about how the modern game values people. What about a different line of work? Would you consider that?
He should just boycott any baseball talk on Part of the Interruption.
Yeah, I mean, they should have that. They should talk to some of the guys in Toronto about doing that.
John Smoltz.
Yep. Anybody who really isn't, if you're not with how things are being played right now, you know what? Step back. Let someone else who, I'm sure there are a lot of people in the minor leagues and in local radio who are just itching to talk about a game that they love. Just let them. You don't sell tickets and you don't get people interested by talking about all the things that are wrong with the sport. We have to acknowledge that there are some things wrong with the sport, and it kind of pains me to do it all the time, because I think that people are less likely to tune in when we point out that the owners are greedy, or that there's a labor dispute coming up, or something else like that. Those are unfortunate facts. That's not something I want to try and like bang the drum on and make the whole reason I talk about this game. That's ridiculous.
Agreed. And now, enough about these jerks. I want to talk a bit more about Jacob deGrom, because he's awesome. His arbitration case is going to be very funny because his former agent is now his GM. But for his last 29 starts of the season, he had a quality start, which is three runs or fewer in six innings or more, in every single one of them, which was a record, by the way.
Of course.
He struck out 250 guys in 199 innings. His ERA was 1.58, and he went 8-9.
Why couldn't he put it together, Josh? Why couldn't he be just a little bit better? I want to know how many times something he did with the bat actually made it so that he could even like end up with a no decision in those 29 starts.
That's a research project. I like that.
Yeah. How many times, despite his losing record, how many times did Jacob deGrom manage to save his own skin anyway? So, yes, congratulations, Jacob deGrom. Your literally well-deserved Cy Young Award is in no dispute here. That said, I think we are at the point where I'm going to suggest to you, if you have a final thought, you should make it now.
Yeah, it's actually something I wanted to mention earlier and I forgot about. One of the things that is somewhat interesting about Thornton is the new manager and where he came from. Montoya came from Tampa, where they, you know, rather notoriously used the opener for much of the season last year. And if that's something that they're going to consider doing at points, he's a guy that's really well suited to coming in and pitching 3-4 innings to bridge to other late inning relievers.
Interesting.
I don't know that they're going to do that. He never said he would, and he didn't say he wouldn't. But if they do, he's a guy that would fit that very well.
Right. I think just to bounce off of that as a final thought, it will be interesting now that it doesn't look like there's a super traditional thought process behind any of the Blue Jays, you know, pitching or coaching positions, those front office positions. I think it might be open season to try something different. I think, again, in the long run, that's good for the game because we find out, is there a different way to win baseball games? And if you're the first one to do it and figure it out, or if you perfect something that someone else has tried, you can win some extra games that maybe you don't have to pay full price for, which would be kind of cool. So, yeah, I think that might be more interesting going forward because nothing like fresh faces to make people willing to try something that maybe hasn't been tried before.
Yeah.
All right. That said, you have been Joshua Housam at Joshua Housam, and I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010. And this has been episode number 123 of Artificial Turf Wars. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, unless something happens like they trade back and get Aledmys Diaz for something else. Talk to you later.
We would do an immediate podcast, by the way, if they do that.